Federal leaders like you know that modernizing IT requires updated technology and a culture shift. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
President Trump has glommed onto the idea of a Space Force as a new and separate branch of the armed services. My next guest argues that probably will happen someday, but now might be too soon. Retired Air Force Lieutenant General David Deptula is dean of the Mitchell Institute of Aerospace Studies, and he joins me now. And General Deptula, you're arguing that, yes, this probably will happen, but now is not the right time because all of the conditions necessary for success have not been met. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, good morning, Tom, and thanks for having me on your show. As you mentioned, I believe that the creation of an independent armed space force really isn't a question of if, it's a question of when, and that when needs to be based on a careful, thoughtful, conditions-based approach. So you might ask, well, okay, so what are the conditions? And to that, we look back at the stand-up of the last time an armed service was established, and that was the U.S. Air Force. And so, bottom line, there are similar conditions that apply to the stand-up of a Space Force as a new armed force. And while three of those conditions have already been met, I think two still need a lot of maturation and development. First, there's really today no unique theory of space power and space warfare to ensure that the appropriate linkage between ends, ways, and means occurs. And second, before Congress stands up a separate space service, we really need the demonstrated capability to produce direct combat effects in and from space as a co-equal contributor to military operations of the other services.
And what could be some effects in space other than one satellite being able to zap another one, as the Chinese have shown they can do?
Well, that's actually what the Chinese did was do a ground-launched interceptor to a space, an orbiting spacecraft. You're spot on. You need to have the ability to negate the effects of other spacecraft while you're in space. And probably the biggest one that would have everyone's attention and people are working on today is the ability to do ballistic missile defense from space. In other words, to terminate an adversary launch of a ballistic missile very early on in its launch sequence, and to be able to do that effectively and rapidly, one can envision the ability to do that from space. So those are two that immediately come to mind, and there are a variety of others.
And to disrupt something from space, say the launch of a missile, does that mean to interrupt the communications that control it in some manner, or to actually kinetically affect it in some way from space?
That means to kinetically to destroy it.
Yeah, so that means that there would be a ballistic type of capability from a satellite, which I don't think anybody has now, or do they?
Well, it may not be ballistic. I mean, that's one option. The other one is directed energy.
Lasers and that kind of thing?
Right, which is probably closer to being able to do that.
Most of the assets in space militarily are under the Air Force's purview at this point. And so I wonder, where does this idea, do you think, originate? Because, you know, the Air Force is going to be unlikely to willingly give up a large part of its operational capabilities.
Well, you raise a good point, Tom, because it's really critical to ensure that any new space force maximizes military effectiveness by making sure space functions are fully integrated into our entire national security enterprise. You mentioned correctly that the majority of space architecture currently resides in the Air Force, but all four services are going to contribute to this new organization. And they won't be alone. We need to think about, and that's why this needs to be a carefully thought out and planned move. We need to think about incorporating the National Reconnaissance Office, the National Geospatial Agency, particularly the Missile Defense Agency, the Defense Information Systems Agencies, and elements of other governmental agencies. They all need to come together to take advantage of this once-in-a-half-of-a-century opportunity. And it's very, very important for your audience to recognize the importance of space operations for joint missions. That really can't be overemphasized. So part of making our forces more joint involves integration. And another thing to consider is that, you know, we got to recognize that there are benefits from co-locating air and space personnel in the Air Force as those two communities engage in a collaborative and integrated fashion.
We're speaking with retired Air Force Lieutenant General David Deptula. He's now Dean of the Mitchell Institute of Aerospace Studies. And in the planning that you see military leadership, current leadership doing, are they taking all of this into account? Because one of the things they're talking about is the reemergence of so-called peer and near-peer powers. And when it comes to space, that's where you're going to find these peer and near-peer powers that are also in space.
Well, frankly, Tom, I tell you, that's a large part of what's driving this. And it's been driven by events such as China's 2007 anti-satellite demonstration. But the larger incorporation of these different agencies and elements, frankly, no, this hasn't been looked at because one of the reasons the advocates for an independent space corps or independent space service suggest is that housing this mission inside the Air Force robs space of valuable resources and diverts focus away from space. But that's not an accurate premise. Let's be clear. This isn't an issue of organization. If people feel like space resources are not getting sufficient funding, then increase the funding for space. The fact of the matter is there's no mission in the Air Force that's getting enough resources to meet the demands of the national security strategy. So standing up a space force is not going to improve the resource deficiencies of a robust space architecture. It's quite frankly going to make the situation worse by burning cash on standing up another bureaucracy.
Because it would have its own accounting and acquisition and all those tail functions at a time when the Air Force, I guess, is having trouble retaining pilots and keeping the fleet that it has airworthy and ready.
Well, yeah, it's not just the fleet that it has. We have a geriatric Air Force, Tom. We got an Air Force whose fighters were predominantly equipped during the Ford, Carter, and Reagan administrations. We've got bombers, half of which predate the Cuban Missile Crisis, tankers that were designed during the Eisenhower era, and our advanced trainer aircraft was procured when John F. Kennedy was president. So given all of this, funding shortfalls affecting the Air Force's Space Force are not unique. It is the result of a broader resource debate that impacts aerospace forces writ large, regardless of if they operate inside the atmosphere or outside of it.
And what's your sense of the appetite for this in Congress? Because President Trump says he likes the idea, but he didn't think of it.
There are a couple of members of Congress that are extremely energized. I think their basis is the concern that space needs greater attention. It gets to my comments I just made on resourcing. But I think as this goes forward, that's why I said up front, look, I'm not opposed to this at all. It's just that we need to take the time to conduct a thoughtful approach to this and incorporate those other agencies. This is an enormous opportunity. But we've established these stovepipes and how we deal with space over the last 50, 60 years, and let's take a look at the entire space architecture and the agencies that are affected, not just one service among five.
Retired Air Force Lieutenant General David Deptula is Dean of the Mitchell Institute of Aerospace Studies. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom. Have a great day.
Find a link to his article on Space Force and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.